Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMA Career and Verrill-Law.com. I'm your host, David Chulo, and our guest today is Tim Hebert. He's the author of the book, The Intentional Leader. The Intentional Leader is about how inner authority can unleash strong leadership. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Thank you for having me today.
No, we're excited to have you. Well, you know, it's interesting. An intentional leader, certainly, that is probably a very deep topic when you think about it. What made you come up with the idea? What made you think about this as a topic? And what brought you to that point of writing the book?
Yeah, that's a great question, David. One of the things that when I started thinking about writing a book about leadership, I had been talking and teaching leadership for about 20 years. And during that time, I started developing my own kind of beliefs around how leadership should be taught and kind of what leadership meant. And one of the things that I came to the conclusion of that leadership was a choice, and that each and every moment, all of us have moments where we can rise to be leaders. And it's what we do in those moments, the choices that we make, that separates people that become leaders or not leaders. And I realized if you want to become a better leader, you want to be more effective, and you want to be viewed in your life as a leader, it really came down to the intentions that you put out there. And that was kind of the whole catalyst for the concept for the book. And as we started to define it, I realized, and I started researching and doing work for the book, I realized a lot of people don't really know where to start to be a leader. And that's kind of what the whole catalyst was and why the book came to existence.
You know, there must be, 8, 10,000 books on leadership. Maybe I'm off by at least 10 or 20,000. I mean, somewhere in that range. Yeah. What makes your book stand out? And what do you think it is that somebody would really be excited about learning more about it?
That's an interesting question. I think what separates my book from other things, there are three reasons why I think it's a little bit different. I think number one is that a lot of books that are out there are written by people who study leadership, and they're smart, smart people, and they write good books. But the problem is that they never actually had to lead, especially lead a business. I was talking to someone the other day, and he said, you know, when I read the book, I could feel that you're the person trying to make payroll on Friday. And you've had that real world experience that makes you understand this. So I think what I bring is a real practical, real world, in the trenches experience to the kind of the concept of leaders, of leadership, and how to develop that while you're, you know, in the company, running the company, or in life and trying to just live life. And so I think that's the number one thing that separates the book. I think the second thing that I do very well in the book is that's different a lot. I share a lot of personal insights and stories of things that happened to me in my life and in my role as a business leader. And it's not the superhuman things that, you know, you read in a lot of books. It's the things when I failed, there's things when I had the greatest fears, or, you know, I was stumbling. And I think that level of vulnerability is an important aspect of being a leader. And I think it comes through loud and clear. And then the third thing is I wrote the book, and the first chapter I rewrote 3 times. The first time it came out, it was very academic. It's like, who the heck is Tim Hebert? Why would anyone want to read his book, you know? And so I said, I have to make myself sound smarter than I probably am. So I quoted every leader that was out there. I quoted 20,000 different books. And I realized I had a very good chapter one that was academic. And I realized that that's not what I wanted the book to be. Then I went the other extreme. I wrote it where I said, okay, I want to be more personal, but it was more memoirish. And then I finally found that in-between state where I was able to kind of be very personal. The way I write the book is the style and tone is that it's conversational. You know, it's like you and I having this conversation right now. So I think those are the three reasons why this book is different than a lot of books. I think any person could pick up the book, no matter where you are in life, no matter what job you have, and really take value away from it.
So, you know, obviously people may not know who you are or what you have done. And as I like to say, what is your street cred for writing a book?
Tell us a little bit about you. Tell us about how, as you put it in your, and I was looking on your website, love's a good climb. What does that mean?
Yeah, definitely. My street cred is I'm a serial entrepreneur. I started 22 businesses in my life. Some of them have been successful. Some of them have failed. And some of them, I created the business to learn something. There's something I need to learn to get to the next phase in my life. So out of those 22 businesses, I love that startup kind of mentality. I love growing organizations. One of the companies that we started in that 22 companies was a company called Atrion Networking Corporation. It was an IT company. We were focusing on helping small to mid-sized companies manage and run IT for their organizations. So my business partner and I started the business in 1987. We sold the business in 2016. When we started in the spare bedroom of his house, and we grew the business to 170 million, 300 employees. And a lot of what we talk about in Intentional Leaders were things that we learned real time. We put intentions into what we were doing to create an incredible culture, to create a company that was focused on breakthrough performance, a company that was focused on developing our employees in the company to a level that they were just the best in the industry. And so a lot of what we talk about in the Intentional Leaders are actual concepts that we use during the growth of Atrion. And the good climb is I love them being outdoors. I love the entire, mountain climbing stuff. So I've climbed Kilimanjaro. I've hiked in the Andes in South America. I've hiked in the Rockies. And I look at life from my perspective, and it's part of my leadership vision, is about climbing. We always see obstacles in front of us. And I look at those obstacles as opportunities to climb. And as you climb, you get to rarefied air. You kind of, achieve and sometimes surpass what you think you can do. So life to me is nothing but a series of one climb after another.
We're talking with Tim Hebert. He is the author of the book, The Intentional Leader, How Inner Authority Can Unleash Strong Leadership. Leadership is an interesting word because it requires others to believe. You really can't be a leader unless you can have followers or partners. And I'll use both words because I think they're accurate in both stages. And so, people talk about managing. Managing is a little bit different, more tactical, at least my belief is, versus leadership. How do you define the word leader?
So that is a very interesting question. I think when I read a lot of books and I read a lot, I talk to a lot of people that are in the leadership development circles, and there's all kinds of ways to kind of define it. I simply look at the word and try to break it down to a couple of simple words. So I think number one, a true leader is a guide. And if you think about, if I'm in a business or I'm in life, if I'm a leader in that world, I'm guiding people to a different point in time. It's about creating change, creating improvements in life. So I'm guiding people through that process. So to me, a leader is a person that's a guide that helps people see where they need to go, help them, empower them so they can take that journey on their own and move forward. So it's really about guiding people and guiding the organization forward.
You have in your first chapter, which it says what it means to be a leader, you have a quote which says, what lies behind you and what lies in front of you pales in comparison to what lies inside of you. It's from Emerson. And then you go through, obviously, in the chapter, and you talk about that in terms of some stories that you work through. You said you rewrote it three times, right? I obviously didn't know that when I went through part of this book. What is the one thing that you say people should latch onto in chapter one that takes you through the whole book?
I think when I look at chapter one of the book, and what I really want people to understand is that, we all come to how we become leaders from different pathways. And there's no one way, there's no right way. What I think the points of chapter one is in the book is that we have to find our way to become the leaders that exist within us. Emerson has been a big influence in my life, and every chapter starts with a quote from Emerson. And the quote that you just did, I think that if we want to start to be a leader, it starts with understanding who we are from the inside out. Too many people, when they think about leadership, it's about developing a skill, speaking better or, managing people better, whatever it is, it's a skill that we learn. I think the most important thing we can do is learn who we are ourselves before we start to lead others. And the chapter one sets the foundation for that. And then the tone of that falls throughout the rest of the book. But it's really knowing yourself, trusting yourself, believing in yourself to that you can do this and become a strong leader from there.
You know, I think that ties right into this next part that I mentioned in the section, which was the real reason why leadership fails is so many organizations isn't the lack of resources or poorly trained team or the economy or any other external factor. Leadership fails from the inside out due to the lack of presence and self-awareness. That's pretty powerful when you think about the fact that it really is about you.
It is. You know, and one of the things I looked at is, when I was writing the book and doing the research and, you know, experimenting with things, is that the more we know who we are and what we want and where we want to go, and we can focus on that and be clear with that, where it's top of mind every day. So my core values, my vision, my mission in my life, my purpose in life, that is something I reflect upon every single day. Every single decision I make as a business leader, whether it's running a business of 300 employees, or I'm consulting with a client one-on-one, or even in my personal life, how I interact with the cashier at a supermarket, all those things come back to those core values. I know them inside and out. And I think most people, when they're starting off in their leadership journey, wherever they happen to be in that point, they have a very loose affiliation. They kind of know that they're a good person. They kind of know what's important to them, but they don't truly know. And so what happens is, as we make decisions, our decisions become inconsistent. You know, we're affected by more what happens in the moment than versus what should be happening from the way we are from the inside out. And so I spend a lot of time in the book talking about, how do I establish that ideology that's core and essential to who we are, so that we're making consistent, intentional decisions as we move forward.
Again, we're talking with Tim Hebert. He's the author of the book, The Intentional Leader. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. And of course, this is educational HR radio. You know, Tim, leadership today during the pandemic is definitely, well, it can be more challenging than ever. And I say that kind of a little tongue-in-cheek, because probably every year I've said leadership is harder than ever or challenging than ever. So I'm not sure that when I think about it, it doesn't seem to be that it's always challenging, because it is. What do you think a leader today, when you really put it in perspective based on what your research and thing has been, what does a leader today need to do that is maybe different than a leader did a couple of years ago when we're in this type of environment?
Yeah. You know, it is kind of cliche that leadership gets harder every year. I believe it gets harder every hour, right? You know, what we did yesterday or what we did last hour doesn't always work going forward. So I think when I look at leaders, what they have to do today to be successful today and in the future is, I think number one is that we have to realize, as a leader, our number one responsibility is to lead people. And if I'm going to lead people, I have to be able to build really strong connections and relationships with those individuals. You used a term earlier on, you said followers and partners. I like the idea of partners are better than followers, even though we use the term in that fashion, because as a leader, we have partners that help us achieve our dream and our goals and our visions. And it is a true partnership. And to be good partners, you have to have strong relationships, because things are dynamically changing on the fly. And many times we can't see around those corners to what's going to happen. So the way we get through this is the fact that we can depend on each other. The second thing I think that has to happen is that we have to become adaptable. You know, just because something worked my entire career doesn't mean that's going to work going forward. So you got to be willing to change your approach, the way you do things. COVID is a really good example of this. For the last 2 years, a workforce that predominantly sat in the seat in an office doing their job 8 hours a day no longer came to an office, no longer sat in that seat, and no longer did their job between 8 and 5. I know a lot of people, they get up and they do 2 hours of work from 6 o'clock in the morning to 8. They take their kids to school at 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, or they take care of whatever. Then they're on from 9 to noontime. They may stop for the afternoon and start working at 8 o'clock at night and work to midnight. The work schedule has completely changed. So we have to be adaptable to be able to respond to those changes in a way that's meaningful. I remember when COVID first happened, they started shutting down. I was consulting with a company and they asked me to help them with their remote from work from home policy that only 10% of their company was going to use. So I helped them. I kept advising them, saying, listen, you should think about this globally, you know, across your entire company, not just on 10%. They published the report. The next day, the state shut down the businesses. Everyone had to go home. So they had to change the policy. And they're on the seventh version of that policy because they're so afraid to adapt to the new normal that's existing. And I think the third thing is you got to move fast. You got to be agile in this day and age. You can't sit there and wait for 6 months to figure out what's going to happen. You need to start acting as soon as you can and be able to make, you know, quick, decisive decisions and move forward.
We're talking with Tim Hebert. He is the author of the book, The Intentional Leader. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetti.
And I'm Pete McVetti from McVetti's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Oh, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay. There's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetti's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com. And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Stephen Chulo, and we are talking to Tim Hebert. He's the author of the book, The Intentional Leader. And of course, you're listening to Educational HR Radio. Tim, you know, in the previous segment, we talked a little bit about leadership in today's environment. And you said a couple of things that I wanted to jump back to a little bit, because I think there's something in you really going a little deeper in this conversation. And the conversation was, you know, I've done this my entire career, but it's not going to get me past that point. And it was funny, when I do executive coaching, I tell people the skills and talents that you have today may not be what takes you into tomorrow. So it's a very similar type conversation. What is it that has made it so hard today? Is there something that has shifted from a generational standpoint? Is there something that shifted from an expectational standpoint? What is it that has made it so that people are more, or I should say, less willing to just take it at face value? They want more detail. They want more. They want to believe more. They want that vision more than ever. What has changed that made that? Because it wasn't that way when I started out, and I suspect not when you started out either.
No, yeah. Yeah, we won't go into how long ago that was, but no, I think you're pulling an interesting thread here that's happening. And I would argue that when we started our career, we wanted it, we just didn't get it. And we were conditioned through the generation that we grew up in to that work was an important aspect, and that you went to a job and you changed to meet the requirements of the job. I think that was a bit, you know, but we still wanted it. We still responded well when we had vision and purpose and passion within the organizations that we did, that we worked for. So I think we wanted it. We were just more able to conform to what the business needs are. I think as our generations have, you know, grown over the last, you know, the last 20, 30, 40 years, there's a difference focus today. When a young person enters the workforce today, they expect the workforce to kind of evolve around them and adapt to them. And I don't believe that, I don't believe the businesses are ready to do that yet. So when I look at my workforce and I talk to my people that are my generation, they just work. They just come in, they do the job. They don't need a lot of accolades. They don't need a lot of coaching and mentoring. And, you know, they just find ways to get the job done. What I find is newer people entering the workforce today need a lot more of that. They need the softer stuff. They need to know vision. They need to know why we're doing this. Why is it important that we're doing this? And so naturally when they come in, they do that. When they don't get it, what we find that's different is they leave the organization. They don't stay. We would stay in our jobs for years, even though we weren't getting those things. So we're seeing in the workplace this dynamic where the workforce is not staying because they have to stay or it's expected that they stay. They're able to move on when they're not getting what they want. And we're seeing the absolute height of this right now with the Great Resignation. You know, it started off, the people we were losing were the people that are under age of 40. We have people now in the companies that I'm consulting with or working with that are 55 years old, and they're coming into work one day saying, I don't know what I'm getting out of this. I'm going to go look for something else. I'm going to take 6 months off. And they just quit. They have no jobs. They have no prospect. That didn't happen, you know, 10 years ago. It didn't even happen 2 years ago. It's happening now. So this is why leadership is so important these days, right? To be able to have those conversations about the vision of where we're going and have passion and excitement of, you know, what we're doing and why we're doing is kind of one of the main responsibilities that leaders need to invest in.
You know, Simon Sinek, as you know, is an international speaker, and I'm a big fan. And he talks about leaders alike being, you know, like parenting. We all can be, but all don't necessarily want to be or should be. Mm. And I 100% agree with that statement, is that we historically have put leaders in positions because they've really been exceptionally good at an individual contributor role, not necessarily at dealing with people or handling things. I love when a lead engineer becomes a, you know, the manager of engineering, and they wonder why they need coaching to understand how to help the people. And then production decreases because you've taken your number one engineer and shoved them into a manager position. And then it just messes and gums up the works. And they're like, I don't understand why, you know, I see this happening. I'm sure you see this as well, this happening across the board. Let's talk about senior leadership, who is really overseeing and makes these decisions. What is it that they have to start thinking about or do differently to make and create an impact in the workforce that really makes it people focused? Mm-hmm.
So we can solve this, David. We'll never have to work again in a day in our lives, right? It's an interesting thing, right? The way I look at things is that I separate the concept of leadership from management. So fundamentally, I believe there are great individual contributors that are horrendous managers. And their management is a skill, and management is our things I can focus on improving. I can put processes in place and templates in place to help me become a better manager. But where most people fail is in the management side of things, in being kind of that, taking that step up in the career. What I think the challenge is for those people to be a leader, is that we need to understand leadership is not necessarily one dimension. So I can take my senior engineer person, I can make them a leader without making them having people report to them. I can give them upward mobility that allows them to excel at what they're really good at. Sometimes they're good at inspiring people to become better at engineers, right? Some of them are better at coaching and mentoring than they are actually making sure the work is being done in timely fashion or everyone's showing up on time. So what I think we need to do as the C-suite is we have to look at leadership and management as two separate items, and we have to understand leadership is multidimensional. I can find ways to promote those top talents so I don't lose them, without having to think about people reporting to them. And my companies, I've made mistakes by promoting my best person and got the worst results possible, just like everyone else. But I also got very effective of really understanding each individual and putting them in a place where they can contribute the best and giving them pathways that were not as obvious as now you have to lead a team of people. And so that's kind of where I think organizations need to go.
You know, in your book, and again, we're talking with Tim Hebert. He is the author of the book, The Intentional Leader, How Inner Authority Can Unleash Strong Leadership. And of course, you can go to Tim Hebert, that's HEBERT.com/book/, and happy to order it there. Or of course, you can go to Amazon. Of course you can.
Yes, of course.
Where else could you go? Right? Of course you can go to Amazon. But in the book, you talk about, in section two, this ghost mode. And rather than me setting it all up and talking about it, I want to let you explain ghost mode, because I thought it was a very interesting concept as I was going through it.
Yeah, you know, the ghost mode kind of came out of a kind of a casual slip of the tongue kind of conversation I had. And I was doing a workshop and I was talking to someone and they were asking questions about, you know, what are some of the signs and symptoms of people being not good leaders? And so we're just talking about, you know, three or four items that I felt were important. And I said, one of the interesting things is that people that are not effective as leaders, sometimes they appear as a ghost. They're there, you can kind of see them, but it's not real. It's not tangible. And from that point on, I kind of started referring to kind of the opposite of being a good leader is being in a ghost mode. So these are, when I talk about ghost mode, these are the symptoms that are signs that I'm not moving in a positive direction. I'm not becoming an intentional leader. I'm not leading in the true sense of leading people. And what I did is in when I looked at the book and I was trying to create the model, I wanted to make it simple. And I narrowed it down to where there's four symptoms of ghost mode. And they're pretty simple, you know, to kind of remember. The first one is really about the lack of presence. And, you know, we see presence when people are very are not engaged, they're not paying attention. I share a story where there's an executive I was coaching his company, that every morning he'd walk by the receptionist at the front desk and not acknowledge that she even existed. And you know, she couldn't tell you two facts about him other than that he comes in it every day. 6 months, not one word, you know, to speaking to her. So the idea behind this is in ghost mode is being present, being self-aware of yourself so that you can actually engage with people. You engage with yourself and be self-aware with yourself. The second symptom that we talk about is the lack of trust. Leadership is about building trust every step of the way. If I don't have trust with the people I'm leading and the people that are around me, I'll never be an effective leader. And a lot of times we allow ourselves to, our egos and stuff to get in the way of building trust. The third thing I talk about is, you know, the ego being a problem, you know, so the ego is something necessary that we have to have as individuals. It helps us create self-identity and it's an important part of our development and the way we live in the world. But the ego is not a bad thing. When we use it incorrectly, it's a bad thing. When my ego is weak and I'm unconfident, unsure of myself, that's not a good place to be. When I'm overconfident or narcissistic, it's not a good place to be. So for us, we can choose how we present and allow our ego to represent itself. We can choose to be humble. We can choose to take feedback. We can choose to kind of be a constant learner. And then the last area that I talk about is this, you know, is disconnection. Leaders disconnect if they're not effective. You know, and it can be with their employees, it can be with the cause and the mission of the organization. So connection is the real way that we want to do this. So those four areas, when we see that we're losing connection, we're losing the ability to be trusted, we are letting our egos kind of rule who we are, and that we're not very self-aware, those are all problems of being an effective leader and what I call an intentional leader at this point.
I come down to keeping the passion, keeping the flame, as we would call it, being able to still believe in the cause and believe in the people around you. And as the leader, I'm constantly amazed by people who don't necessarily keep the right people on the bus with them, right? They don't really, they think they can change them. They think they can do these things. And sometimes they can, but it's the energy, the amount of time it takes to not have the right people on their team and to not have the right team dynamics and the culture, all that. Do you see that as well?
I do. And it's funny. And I read the book, Good to Great, when it first came out in 2001. And Jim Collins does a phenomenal job talking about that concept of getting the right people on the bus, getting them in the right seats. What I found in my career is that when you have the wrong people in the seats, it just drains energy out of the leader themselves, and it drains energy out of the organization. And sometimes that energy drain can be very toxic and can be the death knell of a company, right? It can pull them down. And it doesn't take 100. It takes one or two very vocal, very active people to actually, change the dynamics. The other thing I also learned during this process is that I can't change anybody. As a leader, as a person, I'm not going to change anybody. So the way you are, David, is the way you are. Only person that can change you is you, right? And as a leader, can I help inspire you to want to change, to be doing, to do things differently, to do, to present yourself in a different way, to raise your game? When I've been able to inspire someone, I've seen remarkable transformations in individuals. People that, was on the verge of firing became my best employees almost overnight, but they desired to achieve something more than where they were.
That's the passion.
That's the passion. And if I could find the way to kind of to ignite that passion, then it's up to the person to take it from there. And when I talk about connection, it's about building relationships. So I know what excites you, what motivates you, what's going to light that fire that's going to make you do remarkable things. And that's part of what leadership is about, is finding that spark, being able to help light it to make sure that it's constantly being nurtured so it grows. And when I've done that, I've seen, like I said, remarkable transformations in individuals, but they've done it themselves.
100% agree. Leaders can only inspire. They can influence, mm-hmm. but they can't be in control, because there's no control.
No.
Right. You can't force anybody to do anything. And that's just, you can suggest, you can make a dictatorial statement and say, or else, but in the end of the day, you can't force.
Yeah. And I don't think people respond well to the threats environments, right? And we spend too much time. Our ego allows us that we can save everybody, we can change everybody. And when our ego runs that, we will waste a lot of time and not move forward. So sometimes it's better just to part ways and, say that was a bad experience for both of us and move on. And so learning to get rid of people when it's the right time to do that is a big part of being a manager and being a leader.
You're exactly right. And we're talking with Tim Hebert. He is the author of the book, The Intentional Leader. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than 7 generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across 7 offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAKorea.com and Verrill-Law.com. Remember, the HR Power Hour can be listened to on all the major podcast channels, including iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Please go there and look for HR Power Hour. Click on it, say yes, and listen and enjoy. Also, you can, of course, go to the HRPowerHour.com anytime, and you have all the shows there going way, way back. Yes, way, way back to its inception. So enjoy the show. Have a good time. And of course, now we're going to go back to talking to Tim. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, David.
No, you know, I got to tell you, it's a good book. I highly recommend it. Again, we're talking The Intentional Leader. You know, in this, you talk a little bit about the transformation that you made from being a manager, which we talked about in the last segment, mm-hmm. to being a leader. You know, that's not a potentially easy journey, for especially when you're talking about, let's say, who's listening. The audience is predominantly C-suite. It's predominantly HR leaders, right? And sometimes they are bogged down in those tactical managerial elements. How do you lift yourself up from that management level to a leadership level?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. My journey, David, was is kind of strange. I'm a technologist by trade. So I'm in the IT industry. I'm trained electrical hardware software designer. And so I did a lot of technical work early in my career. And I was at that high individual contributor that someone just said, we should promote him to be a leader. And I got the promotion and I really didn't know how to lead. I didn't know how to manage. I worked for kind of a mid-sized company that didn't have a manager or leader development program. So it was kind of learning by trial and error. And for a good part of my early part of my career, I became a very effective manager. I was very diligent, very black and white, very by the book. You know, here's the process, here's the rules. Some would say probably on the verge of being a micromanager. Started Atrion, I took over. Those traits came with me when I started Atrion. And we grew the company. We were about $12 to $17 million in revenue when September 11th happened. And I remember being in we had a big room where there's a lot of people in, and we had a small 12-inch black and white TV set. And I watched the planes flying into the world. And of course, it was happening over and over all day long. But as I was watching the first plane hit, it made me realize our world has changed drastically in the matter of 30 seconds, and that will never be the same again. And so I went home that night after the effects, and I couldn't sleep. I was worried about, I had 53 employees in my company. I was worried about how I was going to make payroll, how I was going to keep the company afloat. I knew that it was not going to go back to business as usual. So I don't sleep that entire night. And I realized for our company to succeed, the company needs something different from me. I just couldn't go in and be Tim, the very smart technical person, manager. And so for me, that moment of self-awareness was I had to reinvent myself, but I had no books that I had read. I had no training programs that I had gone through. And so middle of the night, I'm making up this kind of what I wanted to be and how I wanted to do, but I knew I had to do something different. And the second thing I knew is I had to talk about things I had no clue was going to happen. So how do you talk about uncertainty in a way that people would believe and buy into and help do things differently? So after a night of not sleeping, reflecting and trying to game plan this, I got in front of my team on Wednesday morning. And I basically said to them, I said, guys, you know, we've never been here before. I'm worried about the business. I'm worried about our country. I'm worried about our own personal lives. And I said, I wish I had an answer to say this is all going to be okay, but it's not. I said, what I will tell you is that we have faced difficult challenges in the past. We've gone through a number of recessions. We've gone through losing a large client. We've always found a way to go through those moments and become stronger. And it's our ability to learn through those challenging times that allows us to do this. And as I said, I believe that we can grow through this. Whatever's going to happen, we don't know. We can't predict it, but we can grow through this. And I think that we'll be stronger when we're off. And I said, these are the three or four things. I laid out a very simple 4-bullet-point plan that was simple things like get closer to our clients. We're going to cut expenses. We're going to be frugal, but we're not going to cut to the bone. We're going to make smart investments. There are four things that we talked about doing. And I realized as I was giving that speech, I had never given a speech like this to my team before. I never talked to them where I showed the level of vulnerability. And I realized those were the seeds of leadership. And that's really what started the whole transformation for me. We not only survived September 11th, my industry was hit hard because we're already experiencing a recession from the 2000.com boom and bust and all that stuff. We lost in the next 18 months after September 11th, 65% of our competition. They just went out of business, were acquired because they were failing, retirement, whatever the case happened to be. We not only grew, but we grew about 65% in that 18 months after September 11th. And it set the foundation for what we became after that. And from that point on, Tim, that effective manager, Tim, that technical person, I had to let go of those. So a lesson I learned is, number one, is leadership is really about looking forward and trying to chart a course when you don't know what's going on. But it's also about learning to let go of things. And I think a lot of managers that are, you know, in the mundane of the task and the minutiae of what has to happen, you got to be there to some level, but you got to learn to let go of some of those things. If you can't, you'll never be able to transcend to that next level.
No, that's a very, very well said. And it's something that I don't think enough leaders think about. And maybe because they're in the minutiae, they're caught up in the moment. And sometimes it's hard to see outside of the glass walls you're in and understand that there's a different way of putting it and a different way of doing that.
One of the analogies, I love the glass wall analogy, but one of the analogies I use when I talk and coach people on how to take it to the next level is I use the analogy of a monkey bar. You know, when you're a kid, you went outside for recess and you got on the jungle gym and the monkey bars were there. It was easy to get both hands on one rung and just hang there. But to be able to move forward, you had to let go. You had to let go with one hand. You had to trust that whatever you had around you or in you was strong enough to reach for that next bar. And once you reach for that next bar, you were able to kind of suspend yourself between the two. But once again, to move forward, you had to let go with your hand that was behind you. So one of the things I always talk about is that we don't take the time to let go because we create an artificial reasons why we can't. We're too busy, team's not there, I don't have enough people, whatever the case happens to be, to learn to let go.
You know, this is on your website, it's under a keynote speaking, you talk about how will you stand up? Leadership is a choice. Mm-hmm. And I think it bodes very well with your intentional leadership book, right, in terms of that. And you have this quote, in life, we are tested every day and we have the opportunity to stand up or sit down. Leadership is about choosing to stand up more than choosing to sit down. And that's your quote. Emerson is not quoted there.
That's right.
In terms of it. Tell us a little bit about that, because you're right. It is a choice. We've talked a lot about that, that in this is exactly in your decision. You had to make a choice to be different.
Yes, right.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, this is probably one of my favorite topics. So there's two concepts I had that are in play here. First of all, I believe that everybody is a leader in life. So it's not that I'm in the business world and I have a business card that has a title on it that makes me a leader. I could have no title. I could have, you know, I could be the entry-level person. I can still lead in the organization.
Absolutely.
I've seen some five-year-old kids that just absolutely blew me away where they lead. They're leading on the playground or leading in the classroom. So I believe fundamentally we all have the ability to be phenomenal leaders. What separates those people from the ones that are not as successful in leadership modes are the decisions that they make. They choose to sit down, as I would say, versus stand up. And so when I look at this, every moment we have a choice to lead or not lead. And so a simple example of this, when I walk into a convenience store or supermarket and I'm being checked out, in that moment, I have the choice to be a leader. How do I respond to the cashier? How do I engage with the cashier behind the... Am I going to sit there and look at my phone the entire time that I'm being checked out, or am I going to engage in a conversation? You know, if I can see the person's having a bad day, can I say one thing and have a conversation that makes them feel just a little bit better? Those are all choices that we make that help us lead in a way that brings positivity to the world, shows that we care about people enough to pay a little bit of attention to them. So every aspect of our life to do that. When I talked to George, who I featured in the book about the CEO that walks past his receptions, can't you just one day walk in and just stop and ask her how her weekend was? Just think of the impact that would have, you know, on that person's life. It would make a difference that day. And if I start stringing enough of those choices that we make in these moments, I become better and better and more effective. And it's really about, to me, it's really about the choices we make and how we choose to rise to the occasion in those moments. And we can have 1,000 reasons why we don't stand up, 1,000 reasons. Our job as leaders is to find the one reason why I should stand up. And I think that's the big difference between people that are intentional leaders and people that are not intentional leaders.
No, I think that's a good way of putting it. You know, you said here, by being the individual who can initiate change rather than react to it, I think that's probably the hardest part, is not being reactive. We rely on what we've always done. And this takes us back to the beginning of this, right? Yeah. We rely on what we've always done. We rely because sometimes it's muscle memory. It isn't even that we even think it out. We just do. And for right or wrong, and by the way, we do because it's always worked, or it's worked most of the time. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think your story about how you had to change on the, you know, on 9/11 to make be different is that realization that I couldn't be what I've always am. And that's hard sometimes for leaders to deal with, especially powerful leaders who have a good sized ego.
Yeah. And especially if you've had a good track record, right? Because why should I have to change? I'm getting, you know, the results that I've always gotten. But, you know, fundamentally, I believe that leadership, there's a part of leadership that's about strategy, right? I can't continue to do the same things and get the same, you know, get different results. I'm going to get the same results if I keep doing the same thing. If I want different outcomes, I have to do things differently. I have to be more strategic about it. So for me, it's about being self-aware. It's about understanding that our egos kind of take us down pathways that are not necessarily to be a good leader, but to protect ourselves and our individuality, right? And we got to be able to let that go a little bit. So for me, I'm fortunate in my life that I've had a lot of opportunities where I was able to, you know, separate myself from my ego and make a decision that was better for me long-term versus the short-term satisfaction that my ego gave me, right? So, and there's times I haven't, and there's times I've fallen flat on my face, and there's times I got by doing it. But for me, the greatest moments of my life is when I was able to separate those and take a different path. You're always rewarded when you do that, always.
It's absolutely true. And we're talking with Tim Hebert, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad.
Oh, come on. This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employer relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and verrill-law.com. I'm your host, Stephen Chulo. You're listening to Educational HR Radio. And remember, you can listen to the show on hrpowerhour.com and, of course, all your favorite podcast channels. Tim, it's the end of the show. We got a couple minutes left. I have been inspired by today's show. I want to go buy your book. We know we can go to timhebert.com/book/, and we can get it there. Or, of course, we can go to Amazon. I've been inspired. If I buy the book, what's the two things that I will absolutely take away from your book?
So I think the two main points that I hope and I think most people will take away from the book is I think that anybody can become a better leader. And the way we do that is through, it starts with self-awareness. If I can become very self-aware and become really cognitive of who I am, where I want to go, what I stand for. If I can identify those things in the self-awareness, I can become a better, more effective leader. So I think anyone can become a better leader. And I think the idea that it all starts with self-awareness. And if I was going to throw a third thing is the importance of building trust and connections with people. The more I can do that, the more effective I can be in all facets of my life.
You know, you just mentioned about connecting to people. And of course, it's a people world. So you've got to be able to connect with people. Sometimes that's harder than you think, especially if you can't relate to that person. Mm-hmm. Any quick tips for somebody?
So I'm a self-proclaimed introvert. So I don't like to necessarily go out and network and do all those kind of things. What I realized, you know, early on, it's about how can I create a meaningful connection with someone. It comes down to two things. One is being very interested in the other person. I don't have to be a great conversationalist. I got to ask people about themselves and get to know them and really enjoy that process. I found that when I went to networking events and I was trying to sell myself, I was very uncomfortable. As soon as I became interested in just finding out more about people, networking became easy and building connections. So for me, the first thing is be interested in other people. And then the second point I point out for me, it's about how do I help that individual? So if I can take the time to get to know them, understand what drives them, and I can help them in some way, then I can quickly build trust, quickly build a way to connect with them at a much deeper level.
So, you know, there's one last quote that I'll give, and it's actually on your about page. It says, self-reliance is the freedom to think, doubt, dream, fail, search, experiment, experience, and most importantly, be. That's, again, your quote.
Mm-hmm.
I think the B at the end is probably the most powerful statement, because at the end of the day, it is what you want to be, is it not?
Absolutely. So you can tell from my book, I'm a huge fan of Emerson. And when I was in the age of 16, his essay, Self-Reliance, was a turning point in my life. And I talk about it in the book quite a bit, but for me, I realized that I wasn't living, I wasn't being, I was going through the motions of life. And I realized a number of things. One, I didn't trust myself. I wasn't particularly happy with who I was. And I realized I had the ability to change that. And it required me to not only just think it, but I had to do it. I had to be it. And so for me at that moment, this concept of being in the moment, being present, really became a big part of my life and helped me kind of transform throughout my life, especially those really challenging times, to be able to kind of do that. So the most powerful part of that quote is the being portion, the be, just be. Sometimes we're not comfortable just being, right?
It's very true. Well, I encourage everybody to buy your book, The Intentional Leader, How Inner Authority Can Unleash Strong Leadership. Tim, it was a pleasure having you on the show today. Thank you.
I'm honored as well. Thank you for having me here today.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.